probably the best way to describe his new memoir is through the comparisons. Many people are calling it a Horatio Alger story, and it is, of course, drawing a lot of parallels to that other memoir called Dreams of My Father. It's by Deval Patrick. In 2006, he became the first African-American governor of Massachusetts, only the third African-American to ever reach the governor's office in the United States, and the first to win re-election, which he won in 2010. So far in his time in his office, he's seen the overseeing the state's health care reform program. He won a Race to the Top education grant and passed an overhaul of the transportation industry there in Massachusetts. Also, a close friend and ally of President Obama, although he's not necessarily a saint, admits in his memoir he didn't like his dad when he was growing up. Deval Patrick, good morning.
Good morning, Celeste. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Thanks for having me on.
In your book, you clearly tried to balance what's an inspiring story with some anecdotes that were intended to prove that you're not quite a saint, that you didn't completely polish up your memoir to make yourself look good.
Meaning I told the truth, right?
Well, I have no idea, sir. I don't know enough about your life to know what's true and what's not, but I'm going to absolutely take you at your word. It's an inspiring story, but it's a tough one. I mean, you did grow up in Chicago's South Side. You didn't have an easy life. And to a certain extent, I wonder how much that sometimes gets trivialized as political rhetoric.
Well, it's not a political book. You know, it's interesting. This has been a new and quite fascinating experience writing and now talking about this book, because as a sitting governor, I think the presumption is that when you do a book, you're either laying the groundwork for a campaign, Celeste, or you're settling political scores. So for the folks who are looking for that kind of book, that's not this book. This is not a kiss and tell. I am a very hopeful person, an unrepentant idealist, and I've come to understand hopefulness and idealism as real strengths. And the book is a gesture of gratitude to some of the people who have taught me those lessons.
So you're saying that this book is not a preparation for a Senate run in 2012?
No. I've got the only job in politics I want, and I'm proud to have it, and I've worked real hard at it.
Well, if you will allow me, I looked through a couple forums where people who'd read your book had questions for you. Would you mind answering a couple of them? Okay, the first one is, one person said, I read it and you mentioned first meeting Bill Clinton when you squared off with him during a lawsuit and never mentioned it again. What was the lawsuit and how did you eventually reconcile with Bill Clinton?
Well, we had I worked for the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, and we had a voting rights case in Arkansas back in the 80s. And we sued the governor, then Governor Clinton, and all of the constitutional officers, because in Arkansas they are the voting registration body. And we settled it ultimately, and he and I worked out many of the elements of the settlement together, liked each other. Eventually, when he became president, I ended up in his administration as head of the Civil Rights Division.
So clearly you settled that particular score. Here's another question for you, and it's actually from the same reader who says, You discuss your deceased parents and mentors in greater detail than living family. Whose toes are you avoiding treading on?
That's funny, because there's quite a lot of detail about my extraordinary wife of 27 years, who was very much alive and very engaged, and probably I say more about her than anyone else. She's one of the strongest and most courageous people I've ever met. And I talk about how the experience of going into the early days of our administration and the end of the campaign, which was a bitter campaign the first time around. We kept it very positive, but there were incomings every day. All the chaos of the transition, and then the early days where we had some bumps and lots of attacks in the media and so forth, and she suffered depression during that time. And it was a very difficult time for her and for all of us in the family. I tell that story because, in fact, in the telling of that story at the time, Celeste, it saved a lot of other people's lives, it turns out, and she got thousands and thousands of notes and cards and prayers and gestures of support from people all around the Commonwealth.
You know, I gotta wonder. I mean, one of the things we mentioned in your bio here was that you helped to oversee the reform of the healthcare system in Massachusetts. That's something for which you're drawing both praise and a lot of criticism. And I have to assume that it's going to become the Massachusetts system, especially if Mitt Romney runs, is going to be a bone of contention in the upcoming 2012 election. Do you think it will help or hurt your friend Barack Obama?
Well, you know, here in Massachusetts, we started down this path of changing our healthcare system 5 years ago when my predecessor, Mitt Romney, signed the law, and then it went into effect the day I took office. 98%+ of our residents have health insurance today, 99.8% of children. There's no other state in America that can touch that. More people are getting their care in primary care settings than in expensive emergency room settings. It's added 1% to state spending. It's been a wild success. And just as we are the model for national health care reform, we're working on some strategies now to begin to drive those costs down system-wide. And I think we're going to crack that code here in Massachusetts, too. So I think it's a terrific story. I don't really understand all of the reasons why the right runs away from this idea because, frankly, it's a question about what kind of commonwealth and nationally what kind of country we want to live in. And I hope we live in a country where we look after each other.
Although if Massachusetts is so successful, that could be an argument that it should be state health care, state by state, rather than national.
Well, we've done this in partnership with the federal government. We have a so-called waiver agreement with Health and Human Services on Medicaid, because that's a big part of it, and particularly how we deliver health care to the most vulnerable. So, you know, this is a partnership. It's a public-private partnership. It's a state-federal partnership. And as I say, the national health care reform is very much modeled on it.
All right. His name is Deval Patrick. He is the governor of Massachusetts and now author of a new memoir. It's called A Reason to Believe, Lessons from an Improbable Life. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you for having me, Celeste. Be well.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.